On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with August Goforth, author of The Risen.
It's a function of the ego mind that invents these ideas about reincarnation because of its fear of losing its own consciousness. I may have these dreams or these feelings about an experience of being someone from the 14th century, and I get names and I get all kinds of facts and dates. And rather than separating myself from it, there's something about me, the ego mind will do this, will grab onto it and sort of put it on like a costume and say, okay, this is me. I'm having a past life experience.
Hold on, August, because now you're just playing the game that skeptics play. I mean, you could hear Michael Shermer saying the same kind of thing that, oh, you know, it's just fantasy prone and we know how the mind works and we know how it puts together things. But the point we're kind of talking about is you're offering up these explanations for how other people's experience is incorrect.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, we welcome someone who is both a psychotherapist in private practice in New York, as well as a medium. He goes by August Goforth to protect the confidentiality of his therapy practice because he doesn't use his mediumistic abilities during therapy. But his book, The Risen, is very interesting, as well as very challenging, about many of the issues we talk about here on Skeptico. Here's my interview with August Goforth. What Skeptico is about is really three things. First, it's about understanding the overwhelming scientific evidence that consciousness survives death. So if you just, from a science standpoint, if you look medically, people die. They are brought back to life, and they have these incredible encounters with what happened when they had no brain, which means they were dead.
Sure, about the survival of consciousness, yeah.
Right. So survival of consciousness is, I think, a cornerstone to understanding this. The second point that we talk about, and the real reason I wanted to talk to you today, is at the same time we kind of, what I say, jump that chasm and we say, okay, gee, consciousness in some way that we don't understand seems to survive bodily death. Okay, I accept that. I think we then reach a point where we have to then start looking at these broad range of spiritual experiences. And you've looked at one way of understanding that. It's through this mediumistic relationship you have with Tim. And I will lay out for you, because we might touch on this too, the third kind of main driving force of this show is the deception. So the fact that this is true and it's scientifically provable from a number of different ways, why is there such a strong, strong force and pressure in our culture to deny the spiritual, to deny anything more than us being biological robots? So
right.
I don't know if we'll wind up going there, but you might have some interesting thoughts on that, particularly because you come from a field, psychiatry, psychoanalysis, that is very protective of that materialistic model that brings us to that biological robot kind of thing. So those are the three points, and maybe what I need to do is back up a little bit and have you talk a little bit about your work and your book, of course, The Risen, which tells about your experience of grief and then your experience of recovery through your mediumistic communication with your partner, Tim.
The book took about 8 years to what some people would say write, I say manifest, because it was a joint venture. That I come from a family background of people with mediumistic abilities and psychic manifestations. It's kind of tolerated but not spoken much about, and it wasn't really a deep part of my life. I was pretty much just involved with living here. Tim passed away from in the late 90s, and I dealt with that loss as much as I could and in the ways that I could, but not through mediumistic ways. But it was until one day he literally manifested. I had an experience of him manifesting physically in the same space as me, and just to pop in and pop out turned my whole paradigm, my world paradigm, upside down, and things started happening very quickly and realizing that what's going on. It's a very long, long process, and it wasn't, and then that went on for maybe 10 years and developing understanding of my ability. But it took a while for me to understand, this is a spiritual medium. This is what this is called. And then Tim came to me and suggested, would I help him with this project and some other people where he is to write this book. And this is a huge team of scientists and philosophers and educators and artists where he is, who were very fascinated by the bond that the two of us had and had maintained somehow, that the two of us had managed to contact each other and stay in contact and continue our relationship on new and adventurous ways. And so they wanted to do experiments. They were scientists in ways of physical manifestation and astral projection and all stuff like that. It's all very private. But at some point they said, okay, now we're ready to do this book. And what book? What are you talking about? But I said yes. And it took maybe 8 years to get a lot of this profound material through and somehow the book to get published.
I think that I'd like to back up for a minute. In fairness, I'd like to push for a little bit and understand this physical manifestation of Tim. And I do it because I've done it in the past with other folks I've had on the show who claim similar kind of things. And I think it's only fair that we ask the question of, how do you know? I mean, August, how do you know? How can you prove, how can you establish that this really happened?
To sort of back up and answer that, I'm not interested in proving anything to anyone.
Oh, you gotta be.
Or convincing anyone of anything, because this is purely experiential.
You may not be interested in convincing anyone. I am a genuine spiritual seeker. I have no reason to believe that you're making any of this up, but at the same time, appreciate where I'm coming from. I want to know the truth, and I have conflicting versions of the truth with a capital T and the truth with a smaller T. So,
of course, that's commendable, but you should seek that yourself. If you want these experiences, you cannot live them through other people or other people's words or believing what I say or what anyone says. If you want it, if you want to understand it and know it, you have to be courageous and do it yourself, find out how to do it, do the scientific thing. A scientist is going to say, okay, yeah, I get that, but let me try that out first. Give me some things that I could do that maybe I can replicate or duplicate your experiment. And our book has some little things in there for people how to do that. But my job, I don't have a job of teaching people how to do this or to do readings for them or to connect them with their loved ones. I can only relate. It's a story, really, in many ways, about what my experience is. So it's kind of an experiential paradigm where even like Rhea White, who was well known for her writings and analysis on spiritual mediums, that even a scientist who wants to examine and test a medium really isn't in the best position to do that until they've had the experience themselves.
But August, hold on, because I've done dozens and dozens of spirit medium readings, mainly as the proxy, okay? So in an attempt to investigate this and share it with other people, I've served as an intermediary and have spoken with mediums on behalf of someone else. And I have to say, that experience for me was extremely confirming of the reality of spirit medium communication on many levels. So I'm not a doubter about that. But I would push back a little bit that I don't have to directly experience that in order to understand or gain or appreciate the work of other researchers who do. You know, Julie Beischel is the person I always...
So you're sort of experiencing it secondhand or based on hearsay.
The counter to that, of course, is that you have only one experience. And if you rely completely on that single experience and don't open yourself up to the experiences that other people have had across time, across cultures, you are not giving yourself the chance to test your experience versus these other experiences.
Yeah, of course. And when the opportunities arise for me to do that, say I get an invitation to a sitting or a seance or a circle to go experience, especially physical manifestations, I will do that to go and experience what's going on. And sometimes I'm able to, because coming from my own experience, each time I experience something, I gain a deeper understanding. It becomes a part of me. I encourage people to ask questions and sure, like, what's it like, and explain it to me. And I can, but I could tell you all about the taste of honey. And if you've never
Everyone always says that. Everyone always says that. You know what? I really want to take the opportunity to kind of push back on that, because there's so many ways of knowing. I can't fully appreciate what it would be like to have the kind of profound experiences you do. I'm not tuned up that way. But what I do appreciate, and what I think you are not fully appreciating, is the work that others do. There's a whole work associated with scholarship, with doing good science in the general sense of science being a method of discovery, a way of learning, that I think gets discounted. So
yeah, so it sounds like you've read my academic papers on the subject already.
Well, okay, why are you saying that? A minute ago, you said, I have to experience. And I'm saying, you know what? I don't have to experience. I can actually choose not to experience.
That's right. That is a choice.
But August, I'm saying let's acknowledge the validity of the scholar. I'm not a scholar, but the academic scholar or the researcher who says, I'm going to stand apart and I'm going to look at all these different experiences. I'm going to compare and I'm going to do the experiments. And I'm going to do, you know, whether it's going in spirit circles and testing and comparing, I think that's important work.
Yeah, well, I do that work too. I mean, I do.
Well, isn't that proving?
Is it proving? I don't know if it proves anything at all.
Is it attempting? Isn't it attempting to prove something?
I don't know. I mean, for some people it might be. For me, it really feels more, because I'm intensely curious and I love to explore and I love to play. So it's more like play. So it's that idea of always being open. And yes, there are choices. You can choose to do anything you want. You probably know that, you know, a great deal of people who identify as skeptics do a lot of skeptical writing about things, whatever it is, not necessarily mediumship, but they don't always necessarily go and explore it and find out for themselves. Sometimes they do. It's just a huge melange of different kinds of people. I find it all very stimulating and exciting, which it sounds like you do too.
Yeah, I do. I think, I don't know, it seems like we're kind of conflicting on stuff that I didn't think would be that controversial between us.
But what do you see what do you see in the conflict as?
Well, I mean, I said proof, and you said no proof, and then I said, well, isn't doing scientific work and publishing so that others can offer analysis and critique, which is a key part of the scientific process. If you're getting published in peer-reviewed journals, you're opening yourself up to critique, which is the process of proving. But yet, you kind of didn't want to say, you know, that where's the proof? You didn't want to offer the proof. Or I can understand, you know, you don't have to prove everything, and you can choose to pick and choose the topics that you're going to cover in that scientific proof-oriented way, and the ones that are experiential. I think that's fair too, you know.
Yeah. I guess my questioning is, what do you mean by prove?
Well, I guess where I was going early on, August, and I had on a gentleman, accomplished, smart guy, claimed that he had these spirit beings that appeared in his room over 17 times and conveyed all this amazing information about the disappearance of the universe, and it's a very beautiful book and a profound book and all the rest of that. But you have to ask the question. You had physical manifestation of these beings and you never recorded them. You never took a photograph of them. You can't offer anything in the way of real proof that other people would accept that this really happened. Now, you don't have to go there, but you have to acknowledge that people would want to hear, would want to see that. But that's the natural question that anyone would ask when they hear that kind of account.
But it doesn't mean they're going to get an answer. When these things happen, they're coming from a place where it's almost being, it's orchestrated in a way, like it's planned. It's usually not spontaneous. Sometimes people can capture proof, but when you're in the midst of it and you're trying to wrap your brain around what the heck is going on here, the last thing you're thinking of is saying, well, could you give me your autograph or give me some proof or something? I'm a very hard-nosed when it comes to the very field that I'm in, not just in psychology as a therapist, you know, because there's gazillions of therapeutic models and stuff like that. And some of them I have biases towards, perhaps rightly so, perhaps sometimes not. But same thing in the realm of the spiritual mediumistic communities. I've been to seances where there had been, you know, if I had a nickel for every time Saint Germain came out and told him that he was my guide, I would probably have, you know, a couple dollars. And I challenge them all the time. I don't believe everything that comes out of, you know, just because it seems to be coming out of the dark, out of a trumpet in the dark or something like that. And so like you have, there's very strict guidelines for mediums who go to special schools, like the Arthur Findlay School in England, and they're taught to challenge any kind of a spirit. And I watched one medium when this supposed spirit was speaking to her in the dark from a medium, couldn't see anything, and was kind of feeding her a line about something. And she said, well, you know, thanks very much for offering to be my guide, and I think I might be honored, but I really need you to give me some proof that you are my guide, and these are the things I want you to do. I want you to show me in some, you know, terms that I'll understand that you exist, that you're real, that you're who you say you are, that you're bona fide. And that goes back to a very old, actually biblical tradition where you see you have to, Jesus would say to the spirits, you know, show yourself, say who you are, tell me your name, demanding this to exert authority over. And at this seance, the spirit got real uppity and said, well, if you don't want my help, I'll find someone else who really wants my help. And it was like so bogus. But I was so glad that the medium had this training to challenge the so-called spirit.
Wow. Interesting. You know what I wonder about all that is how reliable is that communication channel of mediumship?
Yeah.
Because from what I see, it's just fraught with problems. And I have to say, looking in broader terms at all the spiritual experiences, we seem to run into that again and again. You know, you can only pull the string so far, and then you wind up creating this big, I think you use the word maze, but you're back in the maze. You're back in this confusion.
So maybe what we're seeing is evidence that both are true on some levels.
And that brings up a great point. How can both be true? Some of these things seem to be clearly, you know, contradictory in a way that isn't easily resolvable. How can they both be true?
The suggestion that maybe there aren't as many limitations or maybe no limitations in terms of how our human mind likes to overlay structures and rules and regulations and limitations on things. And perhaps this is outside the limit of our human brain or mind to comprehend yet.
You said that through your communication and what you've learned from Tim and the other folks you've spoken with on the other side, mm-hmm. that reincarnation isn't a core part of the overall spiritual plan. Could you be wrong?
I challenged also that idea of reincarnation. And because I had noticed, I have a huge library of books written by mediums and spiritualists that go back almost a couple hundred years, and not a single one mentioned reincarnation. And so I started, oh, that's really interesting, because it seems like such a widely held idea, almost to the point of cliche in our society now. And asked those questions. And so Tim wrote the final chapter on reincarnation, because it's like something I couldn't even begin to. And I was just blown away by the brilliance of it. And yet I still challenged. I said, but what if, you know, if the universe is unlimited and our creator source or God or whatever doesn't deny us anything, and we can have whatever we want because it's an all encompassing, omniscient, omnipotent, ever-loving force, and wishes us only good and gives us what we want. Well, if we want to reincarnate, can't we? Because if we can't, that seems to violate some sort of a law that says we can. So I was trying to, and the answer that I got back was that we can have anything we want. If we believe strongly enough that we want to reincarnate or have an experience that we could call reincarnation, we can have it. And it's not going to be what we necessarily think here as reincarnation. The fact that, and I'm saying it as a fact, just for the point of discussion, that we do survive death. We are immortal. We move on forward. We don't move on backwards. But if someone wanted to have the experience of moving on backwards, I suppose they could. Since I subscribe to there's no limitations in the universe, anything could happen. So certainly it could happen, or at least maybe it would just be the appearance of reincarnation. If people want to do it, then they can do it. Are people doing it? It appears not. From what I'm seeing and my understanding with Tim and other people over there, at least in these areas, that there's no one there that has any desire to return to the earth. Once they're over there, they're so just amazed and awed by the potential of moving on and moving forward and growing that they do just that. And a lot of them just kind of forget about it. So it's an idea that may stick with us. But if I still can see that it would still hold true that if someone wanted to have the experience of reincarnation, somehow they would have it. I don't know what it would look like or what it would be like, but somehow they would have it. It's not for me to say one way or another whether they couldn't.
You know, but August, hold on, and this is where becomes a little bit difficult, and I don't want it to be, but I've spoken to, I don't know, plenty of mediums, and many of them have talked matter-of-factly about reincarnation as being a reality.
Yeah.
And I certainly know that I just couldn't lay my finger on a name, but I'm a little bit familiar with some of the medium literature out there, and obviously I'm sure you're much more familiar, but I think it comes up quite a bit, the idea of reincarnation.
It does now. It's only been maybe in the past 10 years. I would also suggest that it's a function of the ego mind that invents these ideas about reincarnation because of its fear of losing its own consciousness. I may have these dreams or these feelings about an experience of being someone from the 14th century, and I get names and I get all kinds of facts and dates. And rather than separating myself from it, there's something about me, the ego mind will do this, will grab onto it and sort of put it on like a costume and say, okay, this is me. I'm having a past life experience, not realizing consciously that I just experienced someone else's life, and they told me about their life in a dream or an astral experience. And when I woke up, somehow it became very blurred, and I have this desire, because I don't want to die, I want to live on, that, oh yeah, if I can convince myself that I had these past lives, that gives me a sense of continuity. It gives me a sense of feeling alive and grounded. I feel more expanded.
Hold on, August, because now you're just playing the game that skeptics play. I mean, you could hear Michael Shermer saying the same kind of thing, that, oh, you know, it's just fantasy prone, and we know how the mind works, and we know how it puts together things.
Yeah, I love Michael Shermer. He's very great at that kind of stuff.
I really don't like Michael Shermer at all. I think he's completely disingenuous, and I think he also has a very closed mind. When he's even proven wrong, he doesn't acknowledge it. But the point we're kind of talking about is you're offering up these explanations for how other people's experience is incorrect. You know, so for reincarnation, the best scientific work, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, is the work of Ian Stevenson at University of Virginia, and now Jim Tucker at University of Virginia has followed up on this work. And they have thousands at this point of cases of well-documented reincarnation accounts. It's quite a body of research. It's very impressive to anyone who looks at it. So I can listen to what you're saying, and I can be open to hearing it, but how do we resolve that? How do we resolve that when it brushes against what I think is some good down-to-earth science that I can really lay my hands on?
I don't know, and these are just suggestions of how I'm interpreting what the information has come to me as best as I can. My bias, if any, is that I'm not interested myself in reincarnation, and like, God, no, I don't want to come back to this place. But there are people who do or have a belief. It's a core belief in some way, or it's necessary. But I think it seems more and more to me that everyone's experience, whatever it is ultimately their own final test of what's true for them.
Let me ask it in a different way, and this is really kind of putting you on the spot, but it's something I really gets to the core of what we're talking about when we talk about experiential knowing versus kind of more abstract intellectual knowing. And that's, how might you know if you were wrong? And what would it mean if you were wrong, even on a tiny, small little point? Because I think that's the problem that we run into. And I'm not just putting you on the spot here, but I'm putting on the spot every guest who's ever been on this show who recounts their amazing, dramatic spiritual experience. And they're totally tied to the idea that every bit of it has to be exactly true because it's come from some source beyond them, and that therefore, you know, the whole thing has to be intact, swallowed, or it isn't valid. And I just see problems with that.
Oh, I would too. That's very limiting.
So might you be wrong? And what would it mean if you were wrong on even a more minor point than reincarnation?
It gets back to the idea of science and testing things. And then if it turns out that at first it appears you're right, and then later on someone disproves it or it proves that you're wrong, that's valuable information to have. To say, okay, so I don't have to worry about all that stuff. Let's just let go of that. Let's look at what's next to do. So it doesn't bother me at all. I'm not worried. It's just like more information, discovery about myself.
But in this case, it wouldn't necessarily be information about yourself. It would be information about either the channel of communication or the people who are communicating with you on the other side. Mm-hmm. How do we begin to approach that in a scientific, the word that you and I keep throwing around here,
yeah,
or in an analytical way? I love your idea about the one medium who was very challenging to the spirit that was coming through and saying, you know, I need some more proof before I go there.
Yeah. And what she did was she asked questions. That, to me, seems to be the answer, is to ask more questions. That's like a basic tenet of my being a psychotherapist, is I don't assume, when I'm talking to another person in the room, I'm not assuming that I understand them or know them. I have to understand their language, and I have to ask questions, and they use words, and I say, you know, tell me what that word means, because I use that word all the time, but maybe you use it in a different way. So it's always exploration, moving forward, asking questions, and that seems to be almost the answer here in our dialogue. It keeps coming up. Ask more questions, get more information. It doesn't stop. There's no end of the road. There's no wall. There's no closed door. It's just opening more doors and opening more doors. Even the process that you and I are going through is not a static process. It's moving us forward in some way, some maybe not very dramatic ways, but very subtle ways that speak to us. And later on, we'll think about what we talked about and the feelings that we had.
Well, August, thanks so much for joining me today on Skeptico, and best of luck with The Risen.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. It was awesome.
Thanks again to August for joining me today on Skeptico. You know, the last few episodes of Skeptico have been quite revealing as to just how complex it is to unravel these spiritual questions. And if anything, maybe it gives me, and maybe it gives you, a greater appreciation for the folks who are on the other side. So the folks who are hardcore atheist, materialist skeptics, you can see where they can have some very legitimate concerns about some of the folks who are espousing these spiritual beliefs. And on the other hand, I think you can appreciate from some of the other shows how folks who are believers can poke holes at the skeptics and even the moderate skeptics in their inability to fully embrace the good science that is out there. So I don't know where we go with all this, but it does seem like there's certainly a lot more Skeptico to do, and I have it in me to do it. So as I kick off a new year here, I welcome you to join me and continue to stay with me as we explore this boundary between science and spirituality. So that's going to do it for today. If you'd like more information about this show, please visit the Skeptico website. It's at skeptiko.com. You'll find links to all our previous shows, an email, Facebook link to me, and a link to our forum. Our forum continues to attract a diverse group of very highly intelligent people who have a lot better ideas a lot of times than I do, and certainly have a more depth of knowledge about topics than you'll find just about any place else. So please check out the Skeptico Forum. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, take care and bye for now.